and bought some white. Walking down the tracks, laughing and drinking. My feet start to stumble and my breath start to stinking. Like work to me. Working hard, hardly working. You can take me out and put some other jerk in. Money in the bank, it's sure come in handy, but it don't taste nothing like that blackberry. Like work to me. Yeah. Come by, had a dollar, said, man, let's go and get some wine. Walking down the tracks, laughing and drinking. My feet start to stumble and my breath start to stink. Like work to me.
All right, and let's stop that real quick. Hello, people. This is Luke. We are on air with my show Elephant Loaf. You are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. And this week, as with every week, I have a special guest with me. His name is Ben. Ben, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, Luke. My legal name, of course, is Big Ben the Small, but my friends just call me Ben. Luke, thanks so much for having me.
So for reference, I don't hear those ahead of time, and that was excellent.
Thanks, man.
Especially coming from someone definitely over 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
I don't yeah. Big Ben the Small.
Well, Luke told me like 5 minutes before. He's like, you're going to introduce yourself. So I was like frantically trying to think of something that doesn't make sense.
That is an excellent first impulse, is just like, what can I do that will be weird?
Thanks, man.
So, where do we want to start?
I guess first, how was your day?
That's such a kind way to start. I love that. My day was good. It was up and down throughout. I've been kind of chiseling away at this lab report that I've got due tomorrow.
That's thrilling.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great. It's I had a really interesting physics lab today where we got to use a magnetic field to make electrons go in a circle, and you could see them exciting the helium atoms in the chamber. And so there was just like, we made a green ring, a green glowing ring of varying size.
That's so cool.
It was really neat. It was really, really neat.
So do you, is that like difficult? Does that take a lot of time to do?
For this, no. That was a Physics 12 lab, and they've been really well set up this semester, which is just...
I turned on the wrong mic, and now people should actually be able to hear me. hopefully that introduction went well. Yeah, there you go.
Whoops.
It happens. Live radio. This is... People often call this a podcast, and I have conflicting feelings about that, but every time I mess up on air, I'm like, this is live, and that's what makes it different than a podcast, and I love something about that, because yeah. The mistakes come with it, too.
Right.
The whole time I was going, I can't hear myself quite right in my headphones, what's up? it's not horribly hard to do, because our TA is great, the lab
handouts
are great.
Wait, should you tell them what the experiment was?
Hopefully they were able to hear that. I did, anyway.
Oh, okay.
The experiment was, we were... using a magnetic field to make electrons go in a circle. And it was awesome. We just started studying magnetism, and it was really cool to like physically see subatomic like interactions. Right. And I just realized how much of a science nerd I sound like, but I love it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as a humanities major, I start hearing words like subatomic and electrons going in a circle, and I hear like the opening scene of like a superhero movie where you're like zooming in on the super villain in his lab, making electrons go in a circle, and you don't quite know what it means or why he's doing it, but you know it's big.
It's, so there are certainly issues with scientists that don't know what we're doing. But today we were just making a funky little circle. We were just making a glow up funky little green circle, and it was really cool to see. And we got to just increase. How was your day?
How are you? It was not quite as productive as your day, but I did. So I went into Boston today for the first time in a while. And I go to the Granary Burying Ground, you know, right off the Common, on Tremont Street. It's the old one. It's right by the church. It's where they got Paul Revere.
Yep.
It's where they have not Ben Franklin. He's buried in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. but his, at least his mom, I think his dad also.
Yeah.
And they've got, they've got this massive obelisk right in the middle. It says Franklin in big letters. And then around the back in very small letters, like, mother and I forget what their names were and father, you know, but it's clearly, like, if you don't look carefully, you'd assume that's Ben Franklin, you know, and you got to wonder when they're putting in this monument.
Was that intentionally
done? Was there a little like a diversion, Boston trying, you know, clout chasing a little bit, you know,
clout chasing by putting an obelisk in it. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
But so I go there, to do a project for my prehistoric archaeology class, which is kind of fun. They want, you know, professor, she says, you know, go to a cemetery, a place where you can see graves from the 1600s and 1700s, and you're going to look at the grave, and you're going to come before you go with some kind of hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
I came really close to saying hypotenuse.
You're going to come with a triangle. It's going to be very important. I will not tell you why. But, hypothesis.
With a hypothesis. So, you know, I picked one that I thought would be kind of interesting just to see how, you know, what the average life expectancy might have looked like based on a very small sample between the 1600s versus 1700s. People buried in this you know, and I haven't looked at it, but it was kind of cool because I meant I spent about 2 hours this afternoon just looking at grave like markers.
Yeah.
You know? And at first, you know, the style people write a little bit different back then. Now there's a lot. You know, at first I thought, wow, there's a lot of people who died in December before I realized DEC stands for deceased.
But, you know, I learned,
so I learned something new that way. But I'm kind of struck by this thought as I'm there. In a sense, there's something kind of wild that for a few hundred years we've been marking this land, right? And I'm not, I want to clarify, I'm not saying bad. I'm just saying, like, I feel like culturally notable in a way that we take for granted.
Yeah.
That we mark out this super, super prime real estate right on the Boston Common for literally centuries at this point. For to mark just space for our dead, just to keep track of them, you know, just sort of say this person was there. And in a way, there's something very beautiful about that. It's actually a tremendous amount of reverence.
Absolutely.
You know, there is nobody alive who, like, remembers or knows the vast majority of these people. Like, there may be like, there's a few signs, you know, signs of the Declaration of Independence in there.
Yeah.
There's Paul Revere. There's a couple others. People know them. But for the most part, you know, but we still keep their spot. Most of these markers are markers and headstones, the font, the writing is totally rubbed off. You can't see it anymore, but we don't touch it.
Yeah.
Because there's some sort of special reverence for that. And it's something really culturally I don't know. It just sort of struck me. This is, it's a weird, almost decadent thing we do that is in some ways quite beautiful, but bizarre.
It's one of those cultural things that has no, I mean, if you look at it at the, from the most, like, logical perspective, the most emotionless logical perspective, it doesn't have a function.
Right.
Or it doesn't have a, from an objective, logical, feelingless point, it doesn't have a thing that contributes to society, but it does. Because emotion is baked in, and because culture is baked in, it's so, so important. And, like, I live in Concord, Mass. I'm not going to get any more specific than that, just in case I've got a super fan on air. But I live in Concord, Massachusetts, and Sleepy Hollow Cemetery is where Thoreau was buried, where Emerson was buried, and where all these great authors were buried. But it's the same thing, where we've got 5 or 6 super famous people in that graveyard, and because of that, it is a tourist destination. Right. We've got a whole bunch. There are a ton of other reasons to visit Concord, including, like, museums to these same people, you know, or Walden Pond, or the Old North Bridge. There are so many reasons to go. People go to the graveyard, and they go to Authors Ridge, and they see these super famous people, and just, they were here. And there's the sound, just acknowledgement that they were here, and here they still are.
That's such a, it's a powerful point, because it is to imagine, like, I am somehow, like, connected to this person by space. I'm standing the same person they stood. The place where they were finally interred is, like, right next to me.
Yeah.
There is, like, some weird, like, powerful sense of connection that we sort of get from that.
Yeah.
I think you sort of mentioned before that you were kind of in conversation about this stuff recently.
Yeah. So I'm part of a group on campus called the Humanist Community at Tufts, or HCAT, and one big event that we have either every semester or every year. We're kind of varying it a little bit right now. But one event that we had last week was called Death Cafe, where we do a lot of talking about death and what it means to move on, and you know, what it means to live knowing that you're going to die, and a lot of different conversation topics centered around death and meaning in life. And one of the big things that my table focused on was kind of, you know, after a question we spent a lot of time on was, what does it mean to have a good death? What does that mean to you? And a couple of ideas that were floating around were, you know, is it more important that I am comforted in that time, or is it more important that that I move on and cause the least grief possible? And that kind of started us talking about the grieving process and about you know, what our families might want to do, and the different ways that it could be important and could give people closure to see things like a gravestone, or to, you know, have that memorial, because that memorial is so important, you know.
Right, that's a great point, because at the end of the day, if you're dead, I mean, you know, your belief system, you know, may vary, but I think it's my opinion, you probably don't really care. You know, I don't really expect to continue to exist after I die.
Mm.
I might be wrong about that. You know, I don't know. What do I know? Like, I might be so wrong.
Yeah.
I might, you know, die someday and realize, like, wow, I have made a terrible error, but I don't really expect to continue existing, and therefore I don't expect to necessarily care after I'm dead about that. But
I think a lot of people agree on the fact that you know, your existence as it is stops, and because of that there's a disconnect.
Fair enough. So we'll at the very least say that. But I mean, I know, you know, for, you know, past generations, dead relatives, being able to go to their grave and, you know, I don't know, stop, meditate on their memory for a minute, is a way to feel like there's both still some connection.
Yeah.
This person was really important, but it's also like a way of feeling like I'm paying like the proper respect, you know, because you move on too quickly and it can leave this sort of feeling, this kind of unpleasant feeling in the pit of your stomach, like I have done something not right because I haven't stopped to pay the appropriate respect to this person who deserves it, regardless of whether or not they're there to receive that respect. And having a marker, you know, maybe making it nice, visiting it every so often, and stopping meditating on their memory is, at least I think for many people, it has been for me at, you know, certain moments, a way to feel that I'm paying proper respect.
Yeah.
In person.
Did you, while walking around Boston today, did you see pennies on any of the graves?
Yeah, I was. Do you know what the deal with? It's all over like Paul Revere's grave.
So I don't. But a while back, maybe, I think sometime during the last school year, my sophomore year, my roommate and I were walking around Boston, and we were walking near these grave sites that you must have been at today, and saw that, and I, like, on the note of feeling like you need to pay proper respect, I looked at that and I thought, like, it feels like an important thing to me right now to add to this. And so I searched for the first restaurant that would give me change for buying something of a small monetary value, and got a penny and threw it on a grave just because it felt like the right thing to do, because I'd seen all of these other ones. And I don't know, it's an interesting thing to think about, because I don't know the person,
right?
You know, because for people who are listening that haven't seen this or don't know what we're talking about, at these graves in Boston, there are like dozens to hundreds of pennies on some of these graves, especially the bigger ones.
Paul Revere's has a lot, especially because it's kind of a pedestal and the top is flat.
Yeah.
So you can really get a whole bunch of pennies on there.
And I don't know what it's about, but it's one of those things that just feels, at the time, felt like a significant thing to do, you know?
Sure, I hear that. I mean, it doesn't necessarily even matter what it actually means or what the original meaning was. It just matters that it feels like you're sort of paying, I don't know, you're paying homage. You're acknowledging this person.
Yeah.
You once existed, you know, your mark matters.
Yeah.
I don't know you, but you are significant.
And
so it's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
This took sort of a heavy turn really, really fast.
It did.
We went from T-Bird and the break straight into death.
Sometimes that happens. I mean, like, you know, gotta roll with it as it comes. We could move on to a number of different things if we want to start. I know you brought two very similar songs today, and we can listen to those. We could get into another question. What are you feeling?
Let's put on the let's put on the songs. Do you want to like introduce what we're about to do? We're about to do something a little.
Let's introduce it a little bit.
I want to do something a little funky, which is to say that there will be no funk, but it's a little funky. So I sort of thought it'd be sort of funny to play. We're gonna listen first to Up on Cripple Creek, the version by the band, and then we're gonna, I don't know if we're gonna go straight into it or if we're gonna stop it. It's up to, that's, you know,
that's up to you. No, that's up to you.
And then we'll go straight into then after that we'll listen to a version of Up on Cripple Creek by Hudson. And what I love about these two songs is, well, it's the same song, but the original's by the band, kind of, you know, late 60s, 70s, like classic rock. And then the Hudson version is, well, you'll hear.
Yep.
You're going to hear soon. It's cool.
So starting with, this is Up on Cripple Creek by the band.
This mountain, you know where I wanna go. Straight down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico. To Lake Charles, Louisiana, little Bessie girl I once knew. And she told me just to come on by if there's anything that she could do. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring.
Thank you.
And we are back. And you were, off air, you were just telling me about seeing these guys in concert in high school.
Yeah, I was actually remembering that right before I came over here, because we've been talking about playing this song. You know, so Hudson, the second group we just heard is called Hudson. I'm not sure if they're actually still playing together. Is these four jazz legends who, in like the 2010s, decided, hey, you know, we're all sort of hanging out in the Hudson Valley these days. You know, they're all like a little bit on the older side.
Yeah.
And they all decided, hey, let's just start, you know, jamming. You know, not these guys. So the names are is Jack DeJohnette, Larry Grenadier, John Medeski, and John Schofield. And the four of them are all the kind of guys who can sort of get a gig at any jazz festival they want to, when they want to. So they're like, hey, you know, we'll just start grooving, having a good time. And then 2017, they were like, let's put out an album.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been going on tour a little bit. And so one of the things they decided to include in this album, which was, you know, people, there was some trepidation when they were going to, my understanding, in like the jazz critic world before they were going to release, was there was some thought like, well, how's this going to turn out? You've got these four guys who are kind of all used to sort of being like the leading man a little bit. Like,
yeah.
You know, is this just going to be like them leaning on like their name power? Are they going to do anything like new? Are they going to kind of relax as comfortable? So there was some trepidation. And then it was pretty widely like lauded, mm-hmm. you know, within that world.
That's awesome.
When it came out. And this song is, I mean, it's different, you know, like
yeah.
you're covering a classic rock song and putting a really, really different spin on it. You've got, you know, John Medeski's got that rockin', like intro, like keyboard solo,
absolutely.
And then coming out at the end. And it's like, it's catchy. Like he wants to be like aesthetically like appealing to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like harsh. But it's also like it kind of it's a little challenging place. So you got some of those like really hard like chords,
yeah.
you know, or he's just kind of like plunking down right on the keyboard.
They're goofing know? Around a little bit,
right? I mean, I have no idea what's going on. I don't really know, you know,
yeah.
that much of this sort of stuff. But it almost sounds like yeah, these guys are like having a little fun here.
Yeah,
and you feel it like it sort of comes through in the music. It makes it fun to listen to.
Absolutely. I mean, from everything I've heard about jazz, that's when it's the most fun to be a part of. I mean, at a concert or you, it's loose. It's not like it's technical music, but it's technical music that is approached with, I think, a lot more joy than a lot of other very technical music is. You know?
Yeah, I feel like that's fair to say. I mean, you know, improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys. That's a hard word. I'm still learning my big words.
Yep.
Three syllables is usually my max.
You broke out trepidation earlier, and I'm still a little confused about what that means, but you know what? Onward we tread.
Yeah. Well, you know, the four syllable word is always a little dicey. But
absolutely.
I totally lost my train of thought.
We were talking about technical music and jazz.
That's the
and,
word I'm
and
having
joy
a hard time
and
with.
Improvisation.
That's right. It's pretty like essential to like what jazz is. Like if
yeah.
you're just sort of reading off of a page and you know not really like putting any sort of creative juices in there, then it's like not even really jazz, like something else.
Yeah. Exactly.
I feel like that's sort of jazz is such a wide term encompassing like sounds that are crazy different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can get like Ornette Coleman free jazz, which is designed to be kind of grating sounding and really technically complicated.
Yeah.
And then you've also got like big band Louis Armstrong. These two things do not sound the same thing whatsoever
yeah.
in any way. But we call them both jazz. And one of like the few things that they can really be said to have in common
mm-hmm.
is improvisation.
True.
You know, you're gonna come in there, you're gonna put your own creative like juices into that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna leave. And then you go home.
And what's done has been done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't think twice.
Don't think twice.
No. Yeah. Don't think now. Well, yeah, you can. But
I mean,
you just
maybe
sort of,
a little.
You just play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of an announcement to get to, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So this is all about nature. And I would just like you and the audience to remember your childhood memories where you discovered the magic of nature. Like looking up at the stars or chasing fireflies. Help ensure that your child gets those same experiences. Sorry, I just realized that you, Ben, don't have a child. And so reading that line was a little... But
well, not that you know about.
That's very true. Help ensure that your child gets those same experiences. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest or park near you and discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, hiking, or camping. Visit discovertheforest.org.
Beautifully said.
Oh, well, thank you.
To clarify, I don't have a child. You were right.
I felt deceived. I felt utterly bamboozled for a second there.
I never meant to bamboozle you. I'm sorry. Bamboozle. No, it's three syllables.
That's three.
We're okay, guys.
We are barely in the safe range.
Yeah, yep. But this was a close one.
It was a close one. I've got another question to get to. I guess, more of a... it is a question. This was suggested by a guest... maybe three shows back or so, my friend Daniel, who was my lab partner last year.
I was making electrons go in circles with you? Last year, you said. Last year.
Different lab.
Right,
but,
different lab. Okay.
Definitely making electrons do funky things,
all right.
Just in a little bit of a different context.
Phew.
And he had this question, which was, where are the top five places you've spent the night, or the five strangest places you've spent the night? That can be context, that can be any number of things. Generally, we don't get to five. Generally, we just tell one, Ben, I keep almost calling you Shuggy. We're in this club together where there are weird nicknames, and Ben's nickname is Shuggy.
Right, calling Luke, this is one of the first times I've ever called him that. I usually call him Barnhouse.
Yeah.
Although, to clarify, I'm not saying Barn House, H-O-U-S-E, I'm saying Barn _
yes,
HAUS,
which is entirely different and not at all the same.
No, very different.
But Ben, you told me you had a story that you'd like to share, kind of in this vein.
Yeah, so I'm gonna kind of cheat a little bit and
go for it.
I'm gonna switch. I did not spend the night in this place. This was a late night experience.
Yeah.
That I think kind of gets to the spirit of the question.
Okay, this is good, because I think you're going to throw this back to me in a second, and the story I have is also not somewhere I slept, but is a late-night experience that gets at the spirit of the question. So I think we're in good company right now.
I would say so. This is going to flow together beautifully.
It's not cheating, folks, if there aren't rules. Keep going.
We're going to break our own rules.
Absolutely.
So there is this beautiful little town on a mountaintop in the north of Israel called Tzfat.
Mm.
Tzfat is an ancient, ancient small city. It is, to Jews, the birthplace of what we call Kabbalah, or Jewish mysticism. And Jewish mysticism was this movement by this group of rabbis, which is still very much alive today, mm-hmm. and spread across you know, worldwide Jewry, that was focused on trying to connect to some of like the deeper questions in life, you know, about like the nature of like existence in the universe.
Yeah.
It gets a little wild, gets a little intense. It's very, very deeply spiritual. And when you decide to engage with it, if you're, you know, someone who connects to that tradition, it can be very powerful.
Yeah.
Now, I spent a gap year before college in that part of the world, in Israel. And I was studying in a yeshiva. Yeshiva is a place where, like, a, you know, Jewish youth go to study like Jewish holy texts, including a bit of Kabbalah,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, Tzfat, it's just a few hours north of Jerusalem where I was at this time.
Yeah.
And I'm in Jerusalem studying Kabbalah, and me and a couple of my roommates decide we are going to go up and spend a weekend in Tzfat.
Yeah.
We're going to go up there. It's an incredibly beautiful place. I had been very briefly once before while I was there. It is the kind of place, you know, it's alleyways that are like, you know, 4 feet wide, and that's the main street. And you literally cannot get anywhere without seeing these beautiful views, because you're on top of this mountain, yeah. with these gorgeous, lush valleys stretching out beneath you. And it's the kind of place where spirituality and faith and just a real dedication to like intentional living is very much infused to what the place is. There's this big artist colony there.
Mm-hmm.
You can find these beautiful glass blowers and, you know, painters and engravers and all sorts of things. And it's all very much with this this faith in history perspective.
Yeah.
So me and my friends decided to go up there, and we are having a great, great weekend. We are doing some studying and some learning. We're seeing these beautiful sights. We're walking through this beautiful city. We get connected with a bunch of people who take us in for Shabbat dinner. If you're not familiar with Shabbat, you know, the Jewish, like, Sabbath. On Friday nights, you do a really big meal. So we all got set up at these Chabad homes. Chabad is a form of, like, Hasidim, which are, like, very Orthodox Jews, basically. Mm. Very traditional Jews. But, you know, these people are, you know, they're very warm.
Yeah.
Very warm, very embracing, very traditional. It makes for, you know, it makes them very nice people to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And they welcome us into their homes. We have this fantastic Shabbat dinner, meet these new people. And then me and my friends, we had been at different homes for this. We all meet back up at the hostel that we were staying at. And, you know, we have a little dessert. We had made sure to get some cake beforehand, some stuff to nosh on a bit.
Yeah.
And we're sitting around. We're all in this great mood. Things are going awesome so far.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends realizes that we have so much planned the next day that there's one thing he's very worried that we might not get around to.
And that is?
That thing is, I'm going to say it in Hebrew and I'm going to translate, the Ari HaKodesh Mikvah. Mikvah does not really have a translation.
Okay.
It is sort of like a ritual tub, but it's going to be like spring water. And the idea is you immerse it and it's something that's supposed to spiritually cleanse you.
Yeah.
It's basically going to be at least partially spring water, or it's just, you know, it can be partially tap water, but it's got to be at least part spring water. In many instances, it might be entirely spring water, or it can be, it doesn't just have to be spring water, but it has to be sort of from a natural source,
mm-hmm.
is the idea. The specific rules around what makes a mikvah are complicated, besides the point. And the Ari HaKodesh is the name, which stands for the Holy Lion, was this very famous rabbi from Tzfat named Isaac Luria, who is known as the founder of Kabbalah,
okay.
which he did in Sfat, the founder of Jewish mysticism. So this is, you know, in this tradition, which is so, like, key to this place, this man is a giant.
Yeah, of course.
And this was a mikvah, which was designed for him. He never actually ended up using it. It's a separate story, but it's known to be this beautiful mikvah. My friend says we have to go. Now, it's mid-November. It's about 40 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
But
top of the mountain.
Top of the mountain, but we decide, all right, we'll go do it. Why not? We don't want to risk missing out. So we all trek out, and we start trying to find the mikvah, and quickly realize none of us have our phones with us, and we don't really know where we're going.
Yeah.
We sort of know roughly where the mikvah is. It's a small town. Yeah. We don't quite know exactly where it is. So we're sort of wandering around, and at a certain point, I have the one friend who insisted we go there had been there once before, years before.
Gotcha.
And he goes, I'm pretty sure it's down this path. And we go, you're sure? You're sure, Benji? That's his name. And he goes, no, but I think so. And we go, all right, that's the best we got going for us. The reason why the rest of us were a little hesitant was because the path he was taking us down was straight down the side of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
through this massive cemetery that basically goes along the whole side of the mountain. Ah, we're bringing it back to the cemeteries.
Bringing it back to the cemetery.
We got a theme.
There you go.
And we start following him, and we are in this absolute maze of a cemetery. We're now, we've trekked down about half a mountain. It's the middle of the night at this point. It's about 40 degrees, and we realize, he goes, this might not have been the right way. We're like, yeah, yeah, it might not have been.
Yep, of course.
So we're wandering around the middle of this cemetery in the middle of the night. And what do we pass by? Nothing else but the grave of Isaac Luria, the guy whose mikvah we're trying to go to.
Yeah.
Which ultimately has zero significance, you know, because it's, or rather, the grave has significance to us in this moment. What we're doing does not have any practical significance.
Yeah.
But it has no semen, but it has no practice to us in this moment. But it's really cool and somehow feels portentous.
Yep.
Portentous. Three syllables.
Still good.
We're good. So, finally, we managed to retrace our steps and find our way out of the cemetery. And as we're walking back onto the path, back into town at the top of the mountain, nothing. What do we see? But on the other side of the street, a sign saying, Ari HaKodesh Mikvah, 100 yards that way. We had basically walked right to it and gone down into this cemetery.
Yeah.
So we go, oh, we were really annoyed at Benji at this point. Because it's the middle of the night now. We're all freezing. Our tuchus is off. Mm-hmm. And we go into this mikveh. Now, one more detail about a mikveh.
Yep.
Well, this, not
hotter,
all mikvehs
are... Hot or cold water?
Very cold. Well, it's
very cold.
Let me take that back. It does not have to be that way.
Okay.
It can be warm. It can be like a bathtub.
Gotcha.
And it can be inside. This is neither of those things.
Gotcha.
This is a three-walled, this is a three-walled structure with kind of like an anteroom where you can kind of get ready to go in.
Yep.
And then with the mikveh. The mikveh is not a heated bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally a little grotto carved out of the wall to basically allow water from this spring from the middle of the mountain to
enter
like sort
pool.
Of to enter this very small little pool which you can immerse in. Well, that means this water is like a step above freezing.
Yep.
It is exactly as cold as you would expect a mountain spring to be. It's 40 degrees in the middle of the night in November. And the last and we're outside, and the last detail you need is that in order to ritually immerse in a mikveh, you need to be butt naked.
Yep. There you go.
So we are now in this room, we're getting ready to immerse in the mikveh for, you know, ritual spiritual cleansing. It feels very in keeping with the moment and with the place that we're in. And I go last. Mm-hmm. And I am butt naked shivering.
Mm-hmm.
And I step into the water. And it is this jarring blast as I immerse myself into this freezing water. And as I'm under, I try as hard as I can to really focus on the moment and to be as intentional as possible about this.
Yep.
And you do three dunks when you're in a mikveh. By the second dunk, I'm no longer noticing the cold. I emerge after my third dunk, and I am not cold whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And I am having one of the most powerfully, like, strong senses of, like, spiritual empowerment and cleanliness that I've ever felt in my life. It is this awesome moment of, like, clarity and, like, faith and connection.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I realized what was actually happening is that my body had shut down and gone into shock.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that my body had just sort of decided, you are out of control.
Yeah.
You know, that water was way too cold for this temperature. Just not going to deal with the cold. And that's why I wasn't feeling cold. You know, in hindsight, that's obviously what was going on.
That goes away at a certain point in time.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
In hindsight, obviously, that's what was going on. But in the moment, I was like, wow, this is something else. This is some good stuff. We get back to the hostel. We go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
That was my evening cemetery story.
And you're fine? And like,
I didn't. Yeah, we were
maybe slightly hypothermic, but fine.
Yeah, we were totally good. We were totally. I think, you know, it wasn't like we were like hypothermic. It was just my body was like, what in tarnation was tarnation? Three syllables, guys.
Good.
What in tarnation was that? What did you do? Not dealing with it.
Yep. Yep. I'm out of here.
So in hindsight, it was all shock, but for me, that, you know, sense of shock was one of the most, like, spiritually empowering moments that I ever had. It was just a moment of incredible sense of, like, spiritual connection to this beautiful place. So it was an impactful moment for me, and that was probably my most striking moment that kind of came to mind from that question.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I have been anxiously awaiting to hear your story on this topic.
So, I will keep it short, both because we are nearing the end of the show, and also because this is not going to be able to follow that. But
oh, I'm sure it can.
I guarantee it cannot. But it is a good story, and it involves our mutual friend Francesca, and previous guest of the show as well. She and I both do wilderness orientation, which is a very intense experience at the start of school, where we train for about a week and then we go and lead a trip for about a week of first year's newcomers to the Tufts community, and we welcome them best we can. But in that week of training, you are every night sleeping outside with the 100 other staff members Most people sleep under this big, giant wedding tent. The night in question, Francesca and I were part of a colony of people in this small grove of thin trees that had all hung our hammocks up. And so it was, you know, maybe six or eight hammocks in among these thin trees that could barely hold us, but we're doing their darndest too. And there are a number of people who sleep. This is up at the Tufts Lodge, which is you know, a building that we can go to in New Hampshire. That's middle of the White Mountains. It is a great facility, but there are 100 people on staff, and there are not that many beds. And so, you know, we all sleep outside. And some people sleep on the porch with their sleeping bags and whatnot. We were in the hammock city. Which is great. It's awesome. It's a good experience. You get out of the tent. The tent is hot. Someone's going to walk on you. You know, it's good to have that little bit of space. It also means there's nothing except trees over your head, which is great on the nights that it's clear. And, you know, the one thing that I was taught in Boy Scouts is you know, always double check things, always be overprepared. You know, you always want to have a backup plan, and in this same vein, if you have a rain fly, always hang it above your head when you go to bed, because even when the forecast does not forecast rain, it will happen.
Only if you're not prepared.
And yeah, if you, the time that you don't do it will be the time that you get bitten for it. And so it's about 2 in the morning when I'm woken up to the gentle pitter-patter of rain on my face, and I realize my hammock is damp. It's been raining for a little bit now. I hear movement around me, and you're in a bit of a bleary state. You're not sleeping as you normally are because you're suspended in a little cocoon above the ground. And I just have a moment of, like, not really, like, knowing that it's raining, knowing that I'll need to move soon, because this has happened to me before, but not really fully coming to. And in that moment, I hear just, like, there's one other person that's woken up. Of the six or eight, there are 5 people that are dealing with it, and there is one other person that's woken up. And with rain, you never know if it's going to get heavier or not. And so I, from a fully leaned back position, full sit up, upright, look around, and to whoever is listening, just say, "What's the move?" hoping to find community in the one other person that's decided to find another place to go. And lo and behold, it's our friend Francesca. And we collect our hammocks, and we don't want to go into the lodge because no one else is in the lodge. And it would be kind of presumptuous to go in there and take beds in the lodge when, you know, there are 98 other people outside that don't have beds. But there is just a little tiny mud room in the lodge. And so while we're waiting for the rain to pass for us to make up a decision or something, we spend about, an hour or two in that mudroom, tired beyond belief, but in that sort of tired, giddy state where just everything is funny, and we are in there whispering, frantically trying to come up with a plan because it's raining outside, but we don't want to be the people that stole beds when no one else... And in reality, this isn't a big deal. If it's raining, if you are ever in this position, you can just take a bed at the lodge. It's fine. But we were self-conscious of that. We were freaking out, but we had a great time just trying to troubleshoot or get sleep in this little small chamber within the lodge, just kind of curled up fetal position, trying to figure out what our next move would be.
I love that. I love that line. "What's the move" is such a bleary eyed. I can see you in the middle of the night looking around, just going, "What's the move?" to, like, no one in particular.
Yeah. And the thing that stuck with me from this was, 'cause I hardly remember doing that, but for the next 3 days, Francesca's greeting to me would be acting a little tired and going,
what's the move? which cracked me up every time at first because I didn't know why she was saying it because I completely forgot.
Oh, you did?
At the time, that's
hysterical.
I absolutely did say that.
That's also, I like completely get the sentiment of like worrying about being like taking a bed when like you want to be in solidarity, yeah. But also like it's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like that's like it's I 100% relate and also think that's ridiculous and insane.
Yeah, no, I mean it was wild. We would have been totally fine to just go in and grab beds. I think she ended up making that smart move, and I waited for the rain to pass and went back outside and hugged my hammock.
Fair.
Yeah, we are very close to the end of the show. If you've got any final wrap up words or things that you would like to get off your chest, and then we will go to a song. I'll just get this out of the way right now. This has been Elephant Loaf. You've been listening to Luke and Ben here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you so much for listening. We have loved having you.
Yeah, Luke, thanks so much for having me. This was like really fun. I was like really excited about this, and this was awesome,
dude.
So
just happy to have you, happy that it went awesome, just happy.
Moving and grooving.
Do you have a preferred song for us to end on? I can show you our list.
We talked about Cherry Wine.
We did talk about Cherry Wine. I'm gonna throw that song in. I told Ben, generally I listen to a little bit of all of the songs that a guest gives me. I just listened to this about 4 times today. Yeah, so this is Cherry Wine by Grant Perez. Is that?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't really.
That
sounds right.
That sounds right.
Credits to Grant.
Credits to Grant.
For making a great song.
Absolutely.
Why are you standing all by yourself? Those shoes are made for dancing with someone else. Why don't we move over to that empty space? I'll bid you $20, I'll put smile on your face. I know a place where we can dance the night away. Maybe we could try to make the world spin slower. We could take our time and get to know each other over cherry wine. Well, it's too soon to give up on tonight. I haven't had the chance to show you my moves tonight. I think you'd like to see why they would call me Mr. Dynamite. I can show you while we dance the night away.